Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air till 10. It is now the 14th of May. Can you believe it's the middle of May already? And the country is running out of water because everything is broken. But don't despair, because we're good at other things like the crack, complaining and funerals. And we've world-class wind. And that's it. I'm out of ideas. Tap out your thoughts on the WhatsApp in the usual way, 087 032 32 32. And for longer letters by email, you can always send that to oliver@rte.ie. Myself down, I'm too loud. Am I just shouting? Maybe I am. We have a hell of a show of crack and comedy for you this morning, because they are Dunbelievables crossed with Monty Python, maybe multiplied by Monty Python. Foil Arms and Hog. They've been militarily producing weekly comedy sketches on YouTube and beyond since the crash, really. And they're the early pioneers of online sketch comedy, these three fellas from Dublin. In fact, you know them and you probably have a favourite video you've seen. Personally, the Getting Past American Immigration is epically brilliant. You know, one with the gun at the end. So. And the Irish people who pretend that they can speak Irish. First Day of an Irish Summer is another one. What If Coffees Were Countries? World Wordplay Hotel, which is a very good one. 10 million views on Instagram just the other day. And What If There Was an Irish Pope? 4.5 million views here. They're just absolutely enormous. They have 1.1 million subscribers on YouTube, which is far more than any British Irish act that I can find anyway. They're huge and they're live in studio this morning. Sean Connor and Sean, but they're just Foil Arms and Hog, because we don't know anything about them personally, and we're not going to find anything more about them either this morning, such as their dedication to work. 51551 is the text, by the way. Rory McIlroy is going into his next major this weekend, the USPGA. So I think there'd be a good opportunity to do a Foil Arms and Hog sketch that works on the radio for you when your friends are a little bit too into golf after all of the Ormac stuff.
Hey,
why do you look ridiculous?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'm getting into golf.
Oh, because the whole Rory McIlroy and the Masters.
Yeah, which figures, you know, I'm not getting any younger, and golf is a game that looks kindly upon the older gentleman.
Huh?
Or lady.
Depending on what year your rule book was written in, right?
Well, hold on. Golf is a lot more inclusive these days.
Really?
You go into any clubhouse, there's a captain and a lady captain who are equally insufferable.
That's great.
Yeah, I've even got myself a golf coach.
How's your swing?
We're not there yet. Still working on the basics.
Oh, like your grip or...
wealth accumulation.
What?
If you can master that, you can really succeed at the game.
I went golfing once.
Yeah, you spent more time in the sand than David Hasselhoff.
Is that supposed to be a joke?
No, it's low quality golf banter. It's one of the most difficult parts of the game to master.
Over 18 holes, that's really going great.
Oh yeah, hey, it wears you down.
You got a Claire's later?
I know, I gotta hit the gym. Coach has me deadlifting 200 kg.
You can't lift that.
No, I can't. But a huge part of golf is having a bad back. And just look in any clubhouse.
You're really serious about this whole golf thing?
They've even invested in a fancy set of clubs.
Oh, can I see them?
No, apparently they have to remain in the boot of my car at all times. Could you smear this in a perfectly straight line across my forehead?
What is it?
Well, it's a skin lightening cream.
What? Why?
Yeah, I'm trying to get that golfer's tan, you know. I just don't want to look like an idiot in the changing rooms.
Right. Where are the drinks?
Couldn't get them.
Why not?
I was at the bar, I was about to pay. Somebody coughed. It completely threw me.
Okay, well, I'll get them, I guess.
Oh, thanks, man, yeah. So it's 30 yards to the bar, there's a dog leg to the right. Just try to avoid the hazard.
What hazard?
It's my wife and kids.
What?
Yeah, a huge part of golf is avoiding your family.
Doom-da!
The wealth accumulation being the first step of golf is particularly good. That is good crack. Foil Arms and Hog coming in to us later on this morning. It was Eurovision last night. It began in Basel in Switzerland. And you know they have a national existential crisis because they just put their Swiss flag on absolutely everything. And it's just kind of a, we swear we're a real country. Here's a song about us. Look at the mountains and the chocolate. And our version of German is entirely different to the German, which is a bit like saying Mayo English is separate from Roscommon English, which is somewhat true. Well, it's truth adjacent. And at least they're not pretending to be another country, except for Mayo, obviously. There are new rules for Eurovision this year. Only bring in the flag of the country you're supporting. And on the first night, it didn't work. A massive Palestine flag unfurled, very visible during the last quarter of the show. Also a pride flag, which is not supposed to be there either. But it was good crack. The Icelandic Jedwards got off to a great start. Very Eurovision, looking like kind of twins wrapped in tinfoil, like little burritos dancing about, consuming way too much Fanta, I presume, before they went on. Sweden, of course, are the red hot meatball favourites. They're through with the sauna song, which Looks a bit twee on stage, isn't it? A bit kind of ridiculous, but they've got all the streaming hits and all of the momentum behind them. I did enjoy San Marino. That's the kind of football chanting one, and particularly because it was just a DJ who put no effort in whatsoever. He just stands there and two other guys have to sing the tune for him and they're masked. So it's just like his ungrateful DJ, and that was San Marino, which got through. The Netherlands, I think he's the one who could win it. Italy was a surprise as well. But the talk of the night was Celine Dion's appearance. She, of course, won it for Switzerland. It was in Ireland at the time, the last time they won it until last year, and Nemo and so on. And she was a video link from wherever she was. She's still unwell. And they're expecting, they're still rumouring this morning that she might appear at on Saturday, but she is very much... I thought that was kind of drew a line under it, but that was the most talk about. And the Spanish woman, of course, as well, who said the Irish Sun said there was going to be the biggest hit among all the men watching. Well, not all the men, just the handful of straight men who are watching. And I mean, in the arena in Basel, sure, Marty Whelan is the only non-gay man entirely in that audience, which is why he drinks so much Baileys, I presume, too, just to survive. And also because them bones need calcium. Ukraine, of course, got through at the end. They did a kind of an exciting, you know, three countries and only one is going to get through as part of the 10 and so on. And Ukraine was the very last one to get through, which I presume was a vote of solidarity with that country and everything they're going through, because they had the worst song and the worst staging that I've seen in a very long time. But it was a good crack, wasn't it? It was a good distraction from the serious stuff of the world. The hosts were very funny in a deadpan way. And that song about Switzerland was funny again, just really trying to convince everyone it's a real country and not just a haven for storing things during wars. They don't even have Swiss rolls in La Suisse. But it's a beautiful and highly functioning country to the extent that it would be a shock for every Irish person ever to go there. You know, where's the wind, you'd cry as you arrive in Geneva or Zurich, standing at a platform, sort of agape at the fact that the trains are arriving at the allotted time and aren't filled with stains and sadness and angry people playing their TikToks out loud on there. But look, we do have fine things to complain about. And Mick Clifford is in the Examiner this morning, and he's taking the novel approach of highlighting a major public service fail while charting the career of Munster's finest Peter O'Mahony, the class retiring rugby player and also an amazing gardener as well. You really should look up online as one if you're not aware of that. Cork Limerick Road is a road we've basically been accepting for decades. We've had enough. Last Friday, Mick Clifford writes, Peter O'Mahony played his final game at Thomond Park for Munster. A few days previously, though, he was asked what he wouldn't miss about being a pro rugby player. His usual response was the bastard of a road between Cork and Limerick. This is the N20, which is, he's basically pointing out here that Peter O'Mahony was 8 years of age when the N20 was first earmarked for an upgrade. And two decades on, as his career is over, the road is exactly as it was in 1997. So it's just extraordinary just to see, for some players, it's the training they don't miss when they retire. For others, it's the strict diets, the schedule, sometimes interviews and so on. But for this man, it is driving from Cork to Limerick. It is extraordinary. There are motorways now, says Mick, from Dublin to Galway, from Dublin to Cork, from Dublin to Limerick, from Dublin to Waterford. Major trunk roads elsewhere, Galway to Ennis, very good road. The main road between the second and third most populous cities in this wealthy, developed western country of ours is a bitter blast from the past. There are points along the N20 where you could still be travelling in the 1980s before the state had any money. Back when new roads meant a stretch of dual carriageway for a couple of miles and selected according to the power of a local politician. 8 years of age, imagine, 1997, when Bertie was elected Taoiseach for the first time. The N20 that earmarked and national roads needs in 97, and then the work was to be completed by 2014, the National Development Plan, published in 2000 to 2006, said they're going to do it there. And then the volume of everything else has happened in the meantime, he's pointing out. The M9 is the Waterford one, which, of course, he's pointing out that just by happy coincidence, local TD Martin Cullen for Waterford was a big cheese in the cabinet. And the volume of traffic on the M9 is remarkably similar to that which labours along the torturous Cork to Limerick road at 15,000 vehicles per day. And then he goes through 2011. Peter O'Mahony is now the captain of Munster. makes his Champions Cup debut, which is the Heineken Cup at the time, and he was at the foothills of a great career, and they were talking about what are we going to do about the road, and along comes the then Transport Minister Leo Varadkar, and he basically withdraws the application to do the road properly because of cutbacks brought in by the Troika and how those cutbacks were implemented. An oral hearing in 2010, and this is where it gets very serious. And between 1996 and 2007, 35 people lost their lives on that road. And the upgraded road would save 70 lives in its first three decades, according to an engineer. Still nothing is done. You get to 2021 and... of course, Peter Mahoney's career is coming into its twilight years, and Eamon Ryan essentially cancels the road, announces a new route for the upgrade. Motorway? No, what motorway? And then the sun begins to set on Peter Mahoney's career, and he manages to retire, and there's still no sign of anything happening. The upgrade of the road, which is a downgrade from the mooted motorway, is now scheduled to be completed at a cost of €850 million by 2027. But it's not a motorway and it's going to be anything approached. But you get a lovely view of Charleville for ages as you try to get from either Limerick to Cork or Cork to Limerick. Drives people mad. Somewhat related, French study of 15,000 people shows men emit 26% more pollution due to eating red meat and driving more. And extraordinary story, The Guardian. Cars and meat, major factors also in this gender gap in greenhouse gas emissions. And also it is equivalent to basically the socioeconomic gap between men and women as well, because men earn more. They tend to spend more on things that also cause emissions. But it's all the eating red meat. Men consume and need more calories and so on. So roads are manly, basically. That's what the whole idea is there. The Menendez brothers, this, you know this extraordinary story if you follow them from, of course, it was a huge story in the late 80s, early 90s, but was highlighted in a 9-part Netflix drama last autumn. It's incredible what podcasts and TV series seem to do to old cases that everyone's forgotten about. And they've spent nearly 30 years behind bars for the murders of their parents in LA. And they were a wealthy family, Lyle and Eric Menendez. And they could soon walk free because a judge has reduced their life sentences and makes them eligible for parole. The men, basically, they took full responsibility in this hearing for the 1989 double killing at their Beverly Hills home. They're now 57 and 54 years of age. It was incredible because they were 18. One of them was 18. The younger one was only 18 when the murders happened. And they were separated for a very long time in prison as well, put into separate prisons. They've taken full responsibility for their behaviour. My crime was not just criminal, it was wrong, it was immoral, it was cruel, it was vicious, says Eric Menendez. Because they murdered their parents with shotguns. I'm deeply ashamed of who I was, says Lyle Menendez. He was 21. The brothers insisted their parents were about to kill them following years of sexual abuse by their father, who was a kind of well-known entertainment industry executive, and he was very, very wealthy. Their first cousin, Anna Maria Baralt, is a leading advocate for the release for many years. She spoke outside and talking about how the family have reacted to them in recent years when they consider the murders and the motive that the brothers claim they carried out the murders for.
We are here today with this result because of Eric and Lyle. They chose to live their lives with clarity and a purpose of service. That the judge was impressed by. And so a huge thanks to them, too, for being the kind of people that we could bring home. It was very moving. I think everybody in the courtroom was moved by that. They've said those words to me personally before. That was not the first time that I had heard them take full accountability for their actions, for the effect that it had on my life. I am so happy that I wore waterproof mascara, is how I'm feeling, because I have been crying all day long. So these are tears of joy for sure, and we're very excited.
That's the cousin of the Menendez brothers. They have to make their case now to the State Parole Board next month if they are going to get parole and be released on license, as it is. Miriam Lord's writing about the Dáil this morning. This is back to things going horribly wrong. And she just makes the point that year in, year out, week in, week out, and we know working the media, These stories keep coming. Hardly a day passes in Leinster House without at least one TD bringing someone's personal suffering to the floor of the Dáil in the attempt to ease their pain, and the agony of children stuck on waiting lists, the anguish of parents fighting to be heard, heartbreaking accounts of lives disrupted by a broken system. She says it's an endless loop of the same story. Delays, cancellations, blunders, scandals, oversights, overruns, service shortcomings, miscommunication, non-communication, obfuscation, when all the while patients deteriorate and the loved ones protest. And of course, give up their privacy and everything that goes along with it. The rolling story continued in the Dáil yesterday. Another instance of extremely concerning foul up in the health industry. This is to do with children's hip operations. But what it reminds us of is we've covered these stories of people, you know, surrendering their privacy and their family pain to the public limelight. The scoliosis scandal keeps going on and on. We were chatting to the family of Daniel Collins, who's 14 years of age. You remember his mum Louise and sister Alana talking about the incredible pain that he's undergoing. They were waiting for surgery for a year and 3 months. His spine has deteriorated to a 95% curvature. And they were told last month that Daniel's case would be assessed at a meeting and that if he was suitable for surgery, that they would be given a date. And we have an update from the Collins family. Just remember, we spoke to Louise and Alana on the 9th of April. They're waiting for this meeting to happen to talk about the possible surgery. That was going to happen on the 2nd of May. They have no date. So that was the 9th of April, 14th of May. No date, and still being told surgery is imminent. It's going to happen. No, like they've gone public. They went public, and it just goes on and on and on. And in 2017, you had the Minister for Health at the time, Simon Harris, said by the end of that year, 2017, there would be no children waiting more than 4 months for spinal injury needed to treat scoliosis. Oh my God! This is why people tune to things like Cannes and go, right, we can't fix anything. Let's just read about what celebrities are doing. And the Cannes Film Festival have rules for what women can wear on the red carpet. They're banning nudity dresses and voluminous outfits. Nudity is barred for reasons of decency. It's what we have, the rubbish we have to turn to survive. This is intended to stop any stunts like Bianca Censori's naked outfit with Kanye West at the Grammys last year, and other people have worn these so-called naked dresses. Now the dresses with a train have been banned, the ones that hindered the flow of traffic of guests and complicate seating in the theatre. Very important. These things do get read more than the important stories, can we point out. Halle Berry is talking about this very serious matter on the red carpet.
I had an amazing dress by Gupta to wear tonight, and I cannot wear because the train is too big. So of course, I'm going to follow the rules. So I had to make a pivot. But the nudity part, I do think, is probably also a good rule.
There you go. I feel so ashamed for bringing that to your attention. But look, it has to be done. Foyle Arms and Harker coming in. They have a story about sharing a tour bus with Dolly Parton. So I thought that was a good place to start. 51551 on the text.